the Spirit of Jazz podcast, where music dances with mystery, with your hosts, Bill Carter and Jeff Kellum.
Welcome to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is Bill Carter. It's good to have you back listening to us.
And this is Jeff Kellum. It's good to have me back talking.
Hey, Jeff, we got a special guest today. You met him on a cruise.
Yes, I did. And I was going to quote from Michael Steffen's book called Experiencing Jazz, a book, Bill, that you gave me for Christmas. And just by accident, I'm reading about the drummers. And I'd like to quote here, Matt Wilson, a master drummer of great breadth and depth, who approaches every performance with daring, humor, and imagination, no matter what the setting. That's cool.
Wow, that's, wow. Cool. That's very nice.
Yeah.
Hey, so Matt, welcome. It's good to have you on the podcast.
Oh, it's great to be here. Yeah.
When Matt and I talked on the ship, we talked about, I wanted to kind of frame the conversation in terms of the body, mind, and spirit of drumming. As Matt talked about the body, he couldn't help but start bringing in the spirit. And we talked about the mind, and the spirit came in again. And we didn't have to get to the spirit part because it was just all there enmeshed. So Bill, Matt Wilson, Bill Carter.
Yeah, great pleasure to meet you. Yeah, I've heard you many times with my good friend Bill Mays. I think the first time was at the WVIA studios, and which is the public TV radio station out where I live. And what I loved about it was your energy and the fact that after one tune, you just broke out in laughter.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, this is it. He's got a good spirit.
Yeah. That trio we're referring to is the great Bill Mays with Martin Wind. We've had a long time relationship. And when we've played recently in the last couple of years again, and it's so welcoming, you know. Mm-hmm. And Bill's a master at colors and blend and all kinds of, you know, I mean, there was a nice radio show that a couple people from the West Coast do basically during COVID. They did this and they've continued it. And they focus in on Los Angeles, you know, based people or have been there. Mm-hmm. And the one a few months ago on Bill was fantastic. I remember I was cooking dinner and tuned in while it was going on. It was great to hear him with.
So Bill mentioned you're smiling during that WVIA performance, and one of the things that this book mentioned was a humor. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this basically or just a little bit on the ship about where does this humor come in playing? Is it just the joy of playing, or are you're not doing comedic stuff just to get a laugh? You're just enjoying
it. I mean, sometimes it depends. No, but we talked about just like a broad range of emotions. It kind of came too from the groups I saw when I was younger. You know, that's what I saw when I saw Dizzy, or I saw Count Basie's band when I was a kid, or Louis Belson. Mr. Belson, I got to see a lot, and he was always so joyful, so positive. If not the nicest guy in jazz history, one of the, I have to say, you have to be in the top. So, you know, I just saw that and I thought, oh, you know, that's part of what we do. And it kind of aligns with the way I am anyway. But I feel like with humor, if you can make people laugh, you have more of a chance of making them cry. So it's kind of like, it's kind of reminiscent to me of when there were dramatic episodes of beloved sitcoms.
Yeah, sure.
MASH or Good Times or All in the Family or whatever. You know, when there were crisis there, we related to them. If it's all serious all the time, then the music, you know, the serious part's not going to be there. And the people that I've worked with a lot really explore those broad range of emotions, you know, work. I mean, play is the right word. But, you know, people like Dewey Redman and Charlie Hayden and folks like that, we explore such a wide range of emotions within this, along with tempos and dynamics and keys and all that. And also anything that we can do to make it more vulnerable. Hmm. Vulnerability is one of the things that lets us in to a situation as players, but also as listeners. That's what is great about this music, I believe, is when we hear the wrinkles we're experiencing the wrinkles or the adventure at the same time, it lets us, it really does let us in. So I believe that's kind of one of the qualifications. And I think the daring aspect of it, which Michael's described, yeah, I think that's part of it too. I mean, Sid Catlett was beloved by Lester Young because Mr. Young didn't have to think about what was going on back then. Now, the opposite end of that is I played for, 12 years with Dewey Redmond from December of 94 until he passed in 2006. But he told me, he says, Matthew, I've been playing with the great drummer, Paul Motion, because I've been playing with him for 40 years. I still can't figure out what is going on back there. So, I mean, at the same time that we want to be comfortable in this, we also want to be things that provoke, that incite, that steer it, that allow it to go different places. So we care, but we don't want it to be careful and we don't want it to be careless. We want to find that fine line between all that. But if it's safe, it's really not as much of an adventure. Yeah. So I like it when it has that danger side in all kinds of music. You can sense that. There's a great Aaron Copland quote about that, where, if there's danger in a performance, there's a certain amount, again, that vulnerability or that accessibility that is welcomed in that,
Well, it's so deeply human. Driving. And I think that's where the spirit really meets us. It's that vulnerability that, I'm going to take a leap without a safety net here. I'm just going to jump and see what happens.
Exactly. Matter of fact, we have this Christmas trio that plays, and somebody described our performances as a moniker for a certain university that produced a lot of artists, which was Leap Before You Look. So, which is being dangerous. I mean, danger in music is not danger like climbing a mountain or, flying a plane, but, there is, we want to have that. And so sometimes people are pretty careful about, at the risk of not sounding good, they'll sacrifice that, which is okay. I understand. But when you really live like this, it's always fun.
But what an exciting performance when the drummer is risking and then the sax player is risking and the pianist is risking.
Yeah.
You can feel that both the tension and the release at the same time.
Yeah, exactly. And we feel welcomed into, like I said earlier, welcomed into the proceedings that way, ushered in the proceedings that way. It's nice to hear, go back and listen to records that you really love and you're like, listen, oh, wow, they kind of had to adjust there. Wow, they're human, Miles Davis's groups were human, John Coltrane's groups were human, so it's nice to see that possibility there. So vulnerability is a big part of it. And that sense of, danger that performance could get out of hand. That's quoting Mr. Copeland, there's that excitement.
I was looking over a transcription that Steve Kahn, the guitarist, had done of Herbie Hancock's solo on the Miles Davis performance of the Wayne Shorter tune Pinocchio.
Yeah.
And Herbie adds two measures to the musical form, and everybody just kind of goes with it, like, solid, okay, whatever. I mean, there's an elasticity here.
Yeah.
At which would be totally lost on a lot of our students who are learning to play a tune and stick to 16 bars. And there he is adding two more.
Yeah. In the words of my dear friend, Stefan Harris, it's not a mistake. It's welcoming a new opportunity, and then in Herbie's book, Possibilities, he talks about that.
It does.
And where he talks about where he, played something that was obviously not right. And Miles kind of gave a look, but then took it and took music and allowed music to another, something else to emerge from it. Yeah. So I think that's part of that too, is letting go. And especially when people are really going for it, there's that sense of adventure that we want to be part of, that we want to welcome, that we, that we thrive about being in. It's great to be, you know, I've been really fortunate to be around some real improvisers. You know what I mean? I mean, there are people that solo and then there are improvisers. Lee Konitz was an improviser. Didn't play licks per se. It was truly in the moment. Steve Nelson, the great vibraphonist, I feel is a, you know, truly great improviser. Another person I got a chance to play with him last year, who I've been a big fan of for many years because of his recordings with Don Cherry and all kinds of folks. But Carl Berger, the great vibraphonist, there's a lot of people. Billy Drews, Joe Lovano. I mean, the list goes on. Steve Kahn, you just mentioned. There's so many great, but when you really get up there and they're like in it for that moment, so liberated, so beautiful. It inspires you again, where someone takes those chances, it kind of gives everybody else permission. If everything's careful, then it'll be like, oh yeah, all right, we'll play. But you know, Buster Williams goes for it. You know, I played so many nights with him where, wow, we levitated basically. And you know, there you go. I mean, it's, you've got to, you know, in the words of Will Rogers, you've got to go far out on that limb to find out how far too far is. And if you play it safe.
Okay, so tell us a little bit, you know, how do you develop this quality of spirit, this quality of heart and mind? I had friends growing up when I was a teenager who were risky friends. They were just mostly getting in trouble. But
yeah,
how do you develop this as a musician and then as a person? I mean, not by doing flim-flams on the practice pad.
No, you know what I tell students all the time, and myself, you want to find mentors, you want to find guides that help you with the physical aspect of playing the instrument, because that's where the body comes in. We physically produce the sound, and every instrument has its own physical demands as far as producing sound, melody, rhythm, et cetera, et cetera. So each instrument, trumpet is mouthpiece and valves. Saxophone is mouthpiece with reed, with keys, drums, viola, accordion. And so the physical aspect of it is key. So I think one of the things is we want to have as resistant free friendship with the instrument as possible.
Right.
That allows the ideas to come out too. And then at the same time, you want to have an imagination. So what I tell students is you want to find somebody that helps you physically play the instrument and be friends with the instrument, but also cultivates your imagination so that you know, because to me, creativity, imagination is basically, it's either one of two things, new solutions to something that's already there, or you don't have any other way. So you just have to come up with something. Field expedience was a term that my father used to use. You know, yeah. we deal with it all the time. You come home and like, you look in the pantry and you go, this is what I have to make. What am I going to do with this as far as dinner? Right. So sometimes, you know, it comes out of need, you know, you have to come up with something. So you want to welcome all the possibilities as possible. So I think part of the daring too came from, or part of that kind of assurance, and it wavers, you know, like everything is being encouraged, you know, and I didn't know, you know, I didn't know any better. So I'm kind of glad that I was thrown in situations where I was playing the music more than I was learning it. You know what I mean? Or making decisions about what it was or what it wasn't. And so I just was playing all the time. You know, as a little kid, I just got a chance to play with older people. And I was luckily a victim of late 70s budget cuts, because if I wouldn't have had that happen, I don't think I would have had this relationship with the community of musicians. I would have been around my peers, but I wouldn't have been kicked out of the nest per se and had to go out and explore with these older musicians. So I learned a lot socially about the music and how fun it was and how serious people were about it also. So it was nice. It was actually a nice accident to have happen.
So it's learning to dance without a safety net.
Yeah. And not to be afraid to not have it be, you know, I have a few ones. One of them is, the answer is yes, if it's legal. And, and even if it's not. And the other one is no expectations, no disappointments. So in other words, I have standards, right? I want things to be at a level, because if everybody's present, that's going to be happening. But you cannot predict what's going to happen. And if you try to, then you're kind of taking away this part of it too. So some folks have a tendency like, okay, they're going to plan out how this concert's going to go. And I learned that a long time ago, that, you know, the more you just let go, the more satisfied, you know, you're just going to. And it's also, it's just another day. You know, it's like one gig is not going to make or break your, you know, career. You play and you literally just go out and have as much fun with it as possible, but still learn from each situation and try to figure out how to come in and improve so that you can blend, so that you can, most important, I believe, welcome other people to find that. I mean, that to me is if everybody goes out and helps everybody else to sound, then we're really doing, and the song. I mean, the song is our biggest friend, but if we go out and help everybody else to sound, not just the rhythm section doing that, but everybody. And the, also this feeling that we're allowing everybody to be felt and heard. You know, that to me is one of the major things. It doesn't matter what instrument, it doesn't matter the style, it doesn't matter whatever, you know, freedom to me is when you feel that you're being felt and heard and respected by everybody up there. Yes. And there's no hierarchy. And I believe that to something I've discovered in the last couple of years, that feeling of has nothing to do with style or genre, because it's about just how people's, you know, countenance is when it comes to doing this. So I think, yeah, that kind of feeling is essential for me. You know, that's what I look for. It's what I live for.
Let me dig back just a minute and ask, why drums for you? What of all the instruments you might have played, what was it that that led you into drumming? And you also talked about how you had to adjust your body to play drums.
Yeah, I mean, I was born with club foot. I should actually grab one of the casts upstairs. But so I've had on my left leg, I've had 27 casts from the day I was born. So I've had casts to straighten out the foot. And then I had an operation after kindergarten and I just to lengthen my Achilles tendon. And then I had an operation after first grade to switch some cords around. Then I had an operation in eighth grade to move my kneecap over, because as I grew, everything was kind of out of a line. I have two different size feet. I mean, these are European shoes, so like 42, 44. So Nordstrom sells me one pair. It was one of the greatest shopping days of my entire life. And so, yeah, I've had to deal with, you know, I had to deal with, and part of that was my mom always felt that the reason I played the drums is because I had these casts on, she would just put stuff around me, toys. So I would sit on the floor and have all these things around me. And then music was a big part of it. So we had, you know, the console TV with the stereo built into it, which this sound pretty good, actually, where you stack the records. So my mom would just stack records. And that was my vibe. I loved playing along with the music or doing stuff with the music, whether it was, I think there, you know, might have been some March records we had and a record of Yellow Rose of Texas. I remember playing along, you know, just sitting there doing stuff. And then, you know, pop records or something like that. But Louis Prima, we had a Disney record that of Jungle Book, and Louis Prima is, you know,
right
on that. And then I always thought that was Louis Armstrong in my brain, you know, because so, I saw him on television. So then I learned, you know, Louis Armstrong, the greatest American ever. You know, I was interested in the trumpet too. Kind of wanted to do that. And then, but then I saw Buddy Rich on the Lucy Show in second grade, and that kind of changed my trumpet days. You know, that was something that I could do. I mean, I remember watching that and then getting the paper that would be between hangers for pants from the dry cleaner back then,
yeah.
And then play, you know, until they bent or whatever. But I grew up in the Lutheran church as a kid, and we did a musical. It was like the 70s when it was still kind of devil music to have amplified or the drum set or something, even then, you know, early 70s. And I can still remember how the songs went. And there was a really good drummer that played that. So he had his drum set there. He went to Galesburg High School at the time. So I went up and I just tried it, and I could actually kind of do it. So I think that was part of it too. There was some sort of relationship that I had with it kind of already, I think. And it kind of came easy to me. I'm not easy, but it was something I had an affinity for, I guess is the right word. Yeah.
Bill has told a story of devil music in church. Remember, Bill, when you played the piano in some sort of skit in church?
Yeah. Yeah, it was a ragtime for a skit about the prodigal son. And so guy stops me at the door and says, never heard that here before.
Yeah.
Come on, man. And that's a lot of what I do is now play jazz in churches.
You know, I was thinking about that the other day on the radio. You know, there was a version. Remember when there was a Catholic nun that had a top 40 hit with the Lord's Prayer?
Yeah.
There was another Spanish nun that might have had one. And then stuff with Godspell and everything like that. That was kind of a thing in the 70s, is, you know, to have that happen. So the drums in a sanctuary like that were cool. It's funny, I just went back there and recorded in that very sanctuary duo with Lederer, because I made this film and we recorded stuff all around Knox County, where I'm from. Okay. And we recorded some of the beautiful sounding sanctuary, this church, you know, in Galesburg, First Lutheran Church, Swedish Lutheran Church. So, yeah. Mm. So it was nice, you know, that, and then also to have that community be very supportive of the music. Matter of fact, you know, our organist at that church, her son was second horn, I think, in the New York, in the Metropolitan Orchestra here, the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. And of course, at my high school, I don't know if we talked about this, Jeff, but at my high school, Knoxville High School, in 1942, 40 years before I graduated, Armando Gattala was there, who was the principal trumpeter of the Boston Symphony for many years. And a revered teacher, was one of Winton's teachers, was Ron Miles' teacher, right. You know, and so, yeah, he was around. And so I met him as a kid. I remember him saying, you know, you want to do this. And he goes, you got to want to practice. You got to like practicing, and you're going to have to practice. And so I remember saying, yes, sir, I would, you know. So I got to meet him or see him again. I was doing a concert in Ann Arbor probably 30 years ago, a little bit more. And he was on faculty there, emeritus faculty. So I got to visit with, well, I just watched him in a masterclass, just listen to trumpet players was an education in itself. But the advice that he offered, everything was fantastic. So, you know, now I tell the story to all my trumpet friends, they're like, wow, Armando Gattala went to your high school. It's amazing. So,
that's cool.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's around, you know, I mean, inspiration is around us. And where I grew up was very, very much that way. I mean, I learned so much about music and socially and everything, you know, about about what it can be. So I was very fortunate to have that happen. Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening to the Spirit of Jazz podcast. This is a production of Presby Bop Music. To find out more about Presby Bop, our music, concerts, and recordings, please explore our website at www.presbybop.com. And send us a note telling us what you think about the Spirit of Jazz. We'd love to hear from you. Check in with us again next time. I'm Jeff Kellum.
And I'm Bill Carter. Thanks for tuning in.